Welcome to the Closing Mock Report. It's November 23rd, 2005. I'm Todd Gleason. In just a few moments, we'll talk with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, about the futures market. And then, closer to the bottom of the hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain. Along the way, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and check in on all the agricultural news. And then, just after the bottom of the hour, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat at 297, unchanged for the day. The March futures at 312 and three quarters were unchanged as well. December corn futures, $1.90 and three quarters, down three quarters of a cent. March futures, 204 and a quarter, down one. The May contract, down a penny at 212 and a half. And December contract for next year in the corn pit at 240 and a quarter, down three quarters. January soybeans, 10 and one quarter lower today at 562. The March contract at 568 and three quarters, selling off to 11 and a quarter lower. And the May futures at 576 and a half were down nine and three quarters. November soybeans for next year down six and three quarter cents, $5.90, the settlement price there. December bean meal, 170.70. They were off $2.90. December bean oil, 21.63, off 35 of the day. From the Mercantile Exchange, January feeder cattle at 114.40 were up $1.22 and a half. The December live cattle at 91.95 were 92 and a half cents higher, and December lean hogs at $61.85 were up 52 and a half cents.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchanges, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd. And there's good news on the Wall Street. The Dow is very close to a four-and-a-half-year closing high. The high would be 10,940, and it's about 10,920 at the present time. So everybody should feel a little richer today on November the 23rd, 2005.
All those folks except everybody who happens to be holding beans at the moment.
And well, unfortunately, the bean farmer took it on the chin today. The Revco people dumped 1,000 contracts of soybeans on the close. Iowa Grain also dumped 1,000 contracts of soybean meal. For the day, 4,000 contracts of beans were sold by funds, 4,000 oil, 3,000 soybean meal, and the soybean harvest is about wrapped up. Historically, it was supposed to be a fairly strong day, and we had this really a pathetic close here, on the Thanksgiving Eve. The market was concerned about the bigger stocks of meal and soybean oil on a crush report, one more case of bird flu in Canada, and kind of a dismal performance. All said and done, basis levels in the Midwest continue to improve, Todd, but it's a down day of a big 10 and one quarter cent.
The question really will be what happens on Friday morning when the markets open again. There is no overnight trade from now until then, so it's all up to the traders Friday morning to whether they want to follow through on this downward movement in the bean pit or not.
Well, it was very quiet when it was all said and done, and of course, you know, 1,000 contracts does set up. You know, it makes a statement that, it was kind of a dull day. We continue to hear, in the world market that soybeans are maybe a little sluggish to sell. Not many moving. The farmers are pretty strong holders. The general feeling is we're going to see more acres of beans next year. But, the problem is that people are concerned about the bird flu. A Forbes magazine article last night that I read basically said, you know, maybe we are overemphasizing it, but people panic when we hear the word this panic from the contamination of, widespread diseases. And that's a factor we saw and continue to hear about in the world market.
It is one of those interesting facts that people tend to panic, especially when it becomes a human problem. BSE, or mad cow disease, is a similar factor. But that was ended up being a trade issue almost entirely. I think there have been maybe 150 human infections over the last 25 years of mad cow disease. Bird flu is a different thing altogether, where they're scared just a bit that this could at least turn into an epidemic in a single country and possibly a pandemic crossing a portion of the globe. Your feeling about trade restrictions and how that may or may not impact the marketplace and whether they should be put in place?
Well, you know, one thing that we, when we start talking about trade, it seems like the Secretary of Agriculture is spending a lot of time on trade issues. One of the things that's a big culprit is, and it's hurting our U.S. corn prices, is, of course, the problem of getting corn sweeteners into Mexico. They're doing everything they can to prevent that, and also the continuation of China subsidizing corn at some very big price levels, and basically exporting about 7 million metric tons of corn that's hurting, you know, the U.S. farmer. If we would basically solve both of those problems, there's no doubt in my mind we'd see at least a 25 to 30 cent price rally in the price of corn. Throw in that with a little bit of improvement in transportation of rail, truck, and also barge freight rates, a bit lowering them some, would all add up to some better prices and export values. It's a big issue, and hopefully, you know, our trading part of the government can get something done on some of those issues.
Boy, Paul, it seems to me that you're saying that the transportation issue may not be all the culprit in the marketplace anymore.
No, it really isn't. And, you know, this Chinese are very concerned about the low income levels of their farmers, and it seems like we are fighting a WTO issue, but we have a winnable issue here with these corn subsidies. I think the other factor here is that the new Nebraska governor went over to China on a recent trade mission, asked to see a very old corn ethanol plant over there, I think 150 miles north of Beijing. And, you know, they could improve their technology, use a lot of their homegrown corn into ethanol and additional ag products that come from ethanol. And, you know, they basically said that, you know, you're dumping corn in the world market, and there's a lot of improved technology to put that corn to better use. They were still harvesting corn by the old-fashioned way, with picking it by in the ear by hand, and it was rather kind of scary, but they still are subsidizing the corn market and hurting our prices enormously.
Speaking of herd prices, come back to home just a bit for me. There will be some that need to make some sales prior to the Christmas holidays. What are you suggesting on terms of which crop they might want to sell, whether it be corn, beans, possibly wheat for a few of the guys that are out there?
Well, you know, from a seasonal point of view, the first 15 days of December are pretty rough, too. My general impression is that we're going to see a farmer that's going to be rather a reluctant seller. He's being exposed to these ultra-high input costs, and just everywhere he turns, everybody has a surcharge, everybody has a fixed fee increase, a freight charge or something to push at him, and he does think he's kind of like in the back seat. My general impression is that, you know, he'll probably sell a combination of both corn and beans. My hunch is that, you know, if we do see crash corn up in the $1.95 to $2 mark, I think that we will see some cash corn move. And I don't think we're going to see the $6 bean level between now and January 1st. But definitely $6 will move cash beans in the Midwest.
I do want to come back to the beans and for just one last question. You talked about REFCO, quote, dumping 1,000 contracts at the end, and probably in what was limited trade today when they closed during the noon hour, pushed that market maybe exaggerated down to the downside. But if you take a look at the meal numbers, they were off $2.90. Does that set a rough tone for the next week in the bean pit?
You know, Todd, when we broke the 566 monthly low in the soybean market, and that was a gunshot to the floor that things weren't good as far as the soybeans are concerned. You know, my point is I don't think there's a terrific amount of people on the long side. The harvest is basically over with. The soybean processor is making 50 cents a bushel for every bean that he buys and processes in the soybean oil and soybean meal. So those are respectable levels. Our private meteorologist, I talked to him this morning, and I said, what's the biggest question that everybody's asking about the weather? And I had to laugh a little bit. I said, how's the skiing in the ski country? He said, no. He said, they're basically talking about, the dryness in the winter wheat growing areas, and also just a lack of just any big news in South America, except, the South American farmer is struggling, his prices, and he's getting a cost price squeeze down there more so than the U.S. farmer.
Paul, we appreciate you being with us today.
Have a nice Thanksgiving, Todd, and we'll see you next year.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
A quick look at Ed Kieser's forecast for this evening. He says it'll be windy and turning colder in all sections of the two-state region. In northern Indiana, clouds, some light snow early, and then lake effect snow developing after midnight. They're under a snow warning after that. Cloudy with areas of light snow elsewhere. In southern Indiana, cloudy, rain, and some snow showers. And the lows this evening from 17 to 37 across the two-state region. Dave Dickey's here now with the news.
In agricultural news, Brazil is warning that it could still retaliate against the U.S. over the Step 2 cotton program, even though the two countries signed an agreement yesterday to suspend World Trade Organization arbitration proceedings. The issue depends on whether or not the U.S. Congress will be able to settle differences over budget reduction measures, which includes a repeal of the Step 2 cotton program as of August 1, 2006. Brazil has previously warned that $1 billion in retaliatory action is at stake. Washington Insider is reporting today that odds are very low that the U.S. Congress will deal with the estate tax secession. Congressional sources give even lower odds that the tax will be totally repealed. Congressional sources say the only chance for action in the next session of Congress is a plan to raise the exemption level of the tax. Midwest crop disaster aid will likely be included in an emergency supplement appropriations bill being created in Congress. However, some corn producers in Illinois who were affected negatively by drought this year say they will likely not meet the expected 35% yield reduction threshold for disaster aid. Congress is working on a multi-billion-dollar disaster assistance measure for relief to federal disaster areas declared in response to Hurricanes Dennis, Katrina, Rita, and Wilma. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Coming up, Karen Hertz joins us for today's commentary segment, in which she says we should be thankful for all the freedoms here in the United States.
This week, our nation takes time to gather with our loved ones and give thanks for the blessings they have received during the year. One of those blessings we should remember is the freedom of expression we have in this country. I'm looking forward to seeing that freedom in action next week as the Illinois Farm Bureau begins its annual meeting in St. Louis. Each year during the first weekend in December, delegates from each county farm bureau in Illinois meet to set Illinois Farm Bureau policy for the coming year. This policy states Farm Bureau's goals and positions on various issues and has the potential to affect future legislation. The policy is not set by the staff or even necessarily by state Farm Bureau leaders. Instead, it originates from individual members, farmers, at the grassroots level. Policy begins as ideas or concerns discussed at various meetings in the counties throughout the year. These ideas can then become resolution submittals. Any Farm Bureau member can submit a potential resolution, that is then passed on to that county's Farm Bureau Board of Directors. From there, they make their way through a resolutions committee and then into the hands of the delegates to be voted on at the annual meeting. Resolutions can also be presented on the delegate floor during the meeting. All resolutions are then debated and voted on during the delegate sessions in St. Louis. This year's resolutions cover a wide range of topics, from education to biofuels to animal health and identification. Major issues that will be discussed include the 2007 Farm Bill, 1031 exchanges, plant patents, and tax reform. As you can see, Farm Bureau really does set policy from the ground up, and that only adds to its impact. It is an organization that is truly democratic. So while you're carving a turkey or beginning your holiday shopping this weekend, remember to be thankful that your voice can still be heard in this country, whether it's by calling your congressman or contacting one of your County Farm Bureau delegates to the state annual meeting to let them know where you stand on issues important to you. This is truly one of your blessings. From the Champaign County Farm Bureau, this is Karen Hertz.
Karen Hertz's comments are her own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved as well. To do so, give us a call at 217-333-0850. Up next, Charlie Schlinker joins us to tell us all about a new type of Thanksgiving tradition.
At the bottom of a low hill near Sauneman, Illinois, hard by a sluggish creek, there are six pens made of metal, wood, and wire. Each pen is at the end of a twisting path of trampled grass studded with white feathers. On this cold, blustery autumn day, 14-year-old Jeremy McWilliams is showing off his product. Turkeys.
So you remove them each day. You get fresh grass. They leave the manure behind so they can fertilize the ground and they're not stuck in it. We usually get a dolly at about each end and we just move it to about fresh spotted grass.
The pens are not open. It's cold. Jeremy doesn't want the birds to catch a chill. McWilliams started raising turkeys 3 years ago when his family moved and he decided he didn't want to find another paper route. He figured out no one else in the area was doing turkeys. Now his day starts at 5:30 in the morning. He moves the pens, waters the birds, 10 gallons of water and 10 of feed, double the water on warmer days. It's 4 hours a day of work. Jeremy knows a lot about turkeys.
About 5 to 6% of their diet is grass.
What does it do for them?
Keeps them more healthy, helps them digest, and they eat like stones and rocks. That helps them digest a lot. They need that.
Jeremy buys his turkeys at 1 day old and staggers the start so he can sell small, medium, and large birds. When they're very little, you have to check on them every hour for the first 6 weeks, he says. He weighs them every couple weeks. They go to market in 21 weeks, a little longer than for larger operations. And he knows the niche his products fill.
They're not classified as organic, but we do not use hormones. We don't use antibiotics, steroids, so I think they're still classified as free range, as long as they get fresh grass each day.
He explains he can't strictly call the turkeys organic because nearby farmers use pesticides and there is a slight chance of wind drift for the chemicals. Jeremy has 4 brothers and 3 sisters. One brother does honeybees, another hay. Mom Lisa McWilliams says she has seen Jeremy mature since he started the project, taking on responsibility, gaining discipline in the routine, accepting that his own time is not his own anymore.
Years ago, he loved animals so much, he'd even cry if there was an ant in our house, and instead of squishing it, he'd hurry up and bring it outside. So now, he's adjusted. Those turkeys are profit.
When he was 11, Jeremy brought a few dozen to market. This year, he's raising 250 for the Thanksgiving table, but there has been a learning curve.
When they're babies, we have had a problem with the heat. The temperature, like 2 years ago, we weren't keeping track of the temperature. So they would get too hot or way too cold. They would fry, kind of, and just die from over-exhaustment. This year, now at Thermeyer's, we kept them really balanced.
Jeremy lost about half of last year's crop before learning to start off at 100 degrees, reducing by 5 degrees periodically as the turkeys grow until they're ready for the out-of-doors. Yet someday he wants to grow them full-time. The turkey industry is growing, too, as low-carb seekers combine with the low-fat and low-cholesterol crowds. But it's not an easy business. David Sin of the Illinois Turkey Growers Association raises 30,000 birds a year near Delavan and Hopedale, and says he is on the small end of growers. Sin says if Jeremy wants to go pro, he'll have to get a serious contract with a processor a year in advance.
And like Sara Lee Delicut meats, there's where all our birds go to, but before we are able to put birds down, we have to work out an agreement with them. We're going to grow this many birds. We're going to have them in this many bunches and this many turkeys in each bunch. If we don't have that contract, there is no open market anymore.
But Sin also says Jeremy has a nice niche market with free-range turkeys. He admits fresh-dressed turkeys are a lot better than what you can buy in a store that are frozen shortly after processing.
You know, like with beef, you let it hang and age. Turkey, if you do that with a turkey, it's a lot better, too. The muscles are able to relax, and they're not as tense and tight. I mean, there's just something. Anybody that's had a fresh turkey, it's awful hard to go back to a frozen turkey.
Jeremy says he's already thinking about more pens and more turkeys for next year as he reinvests profits each business cycle. There are fewer than 24 large turkey processors in Illinois, and even with the market obstacles, someday Jeremy McWilliams may be one of them. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580. We're joined now by Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana, to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Happy Thanksgiving.
The very same to you.
And tell me about the basis in your area as things have wound up and the bins have been sealed and farmers have settled in, I suppose, for a long winter.
I tend to agree. It's very, very quiet around here. We went from being real, real busy to real, real quiet. They've got their cash needs satisfied. They call occasionally and want to know about January corn bids, but other than that, the basis continues to improve, and that's because they have slammed the bin doors. We've probably improved train values maybe a nickel since we talked last week. I think that trend will continue. It'll go back the other way. It just depends on when they want to sell, Todd.
Anybody call wondering why the market was down a dime in the beans today and whether there might be follow-through?
No, I think that right now they're in a holiday mode, and even though there's markets Friday, there's usually just not a lot of interest unless somebody just doesn't have anything to do. But I've had no phone calls since the market closed wanting to know why it went down. I think they're going to ignore it till either the market goes up or they need money, whichever comes first.
I like that attitude. Ignore it until it comes your way. And it'll happen, I suppose, eventually. Got any ideas when that might be?
I really don't. I really thought we'd see a little post-harvest rally and then maybe hit new lows again after the January crop report. But if we don't start a rally here in the next couple of weeks, it looks like they may just go ahead and hold where they are, and this market just could go sideways to lower.
And your cash bids for the day are?
Our cash corn today is 177. Cash beans are 538. New crop wheat's 306.
Okay, you have a good weekend.
You have one too, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. She joins us here on Wednesdays. Just a reminder that the market is closed until Friday morning. It will be open all day Friday, but there will be no markets here on WILL AM 580 that day. The Commodity Week program will be recorded this evening. If you're interested, you can pick it up about 6 o'clock tonight off our website at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Just click on AM. And then agriculture. In about 2 minutes, I'll talk with ag meteorologist Drew Lerner about the weather. Your local newscast is next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Attorneys for Herb Whitlock, serving a life sentence for a 1986 double murder in Paris, Illinois, hope an appellate court will hear their plea for a new trial. Whitlock's request for a retrial in the murders of Dyke and Karen Rhodes was turned down last week by an Edgar County Circuit Judge. Whitlock attorney Susanna Ortiz says they've already filed an appeal in appellate court. Whitlock's co-defendant Randy Steidel is free after prosecutors decided they couldn't retry him due to a lack of evidence. The Indiana Supreme Court is rejecting a challenge to an abortion law that mandates an 18-hour waiting period before the procedure can be formed. Indiana Right to Life says the ruling effectively ends legal challenges by abortion providers, but the Indiana Civil Liberties Union says it may still challenge the law. The mayor of Lafayette, Indiana, says he's hopeful that Toyotas will be rolling off the production line at the Subaru of Indiana plant in a few years. A Japanese newspaper reports that Toyota is in talks with Subaru's parent company, Fiji Heavy Industries, about building vehicles at the plant starting in 2007. Illinois officials say hunters in the state killed more deer in the first weekend of the firearm season than they did last year. The head of the Illinois Department of Natural Resources says the preliminary total of 77,051 deer represents a 4% increase. Champaign City planners say there's now another way to get to the North Prospect shopping area for this holiday shopping season. The I-74 exit at Prospect is often congested, but city officials say drivers can now reach North Prospect Shopping by taking Neal Street or Mattis Avenue North to the newly extended Interstate Drive, then go west to Prospect and head south. The home economist who helped create stovetop stuffing has died. Ruth Seams died November 13th after suffering a heart attack in her home in Newburg, Indiana. She was 74. Seams helped develop the formula for stovetop in 1971 while working for General Foods. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For more information, call 866-837-9027.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. It's a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Ed Kieser is calling for this evening. Actually, this is a winter storm warning that we need to catch you up on before we get to Drew Lerner in just a moment. There is a winter storm warning that is in effect. That for LaPorte, St. Joseph, Elkhart, Marshall, and Kosciuszko counties in northern Indiana. That from 1 a.m. Thursday morning. That's tonight at 1 o'clock a.m. through 12 noon Eastern Time Friday, and for LaGrange and Noble counties in northeastern Indiana from 1 a.m. this evening, Thursday morning, to 6 a.m. Eastern Time Friday. The warning is for significant lake effect snow and considerable blowing and drifting snow. A winter weather advisory is in effect also for portions of east central and southeastern Indiana, that until 7 o'clock Eastern Time this evening. Joining us now to take a look at the weather forecast, not only for the Midwest, but around the globe, is Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew.
Good afternoon.
Ooh, sounds like an ugly Thanksgiving in a portion of the upper Midwest, that's for sure.
Yes, it does. And it looks like we will snap out of this winter-like pattern relatively quickly this weekend. So if you have travel plans going back home, perhaps, during that period of time, you will see an improving trend. However, there will be rain that will be chasing you in a northward direction if you're traveling in that way. The rain will be coming up from the south. This is the beginning of what will turn out to be three large storm systems that will bring winter back to the country as we go through the majority of next week and the following weekend. The first storm system will march across portions of Iowa into Michigan and Wisconsin during the late weekend, early part of next week. It'll be a major major snow producer in the upper Mississippi River Basin, portions of the eastern Dakotas and Iowa. It'll be followed by a second storm during midweek next week that will form in Oklahoma, and it will move north or east-northeast from there across the heart of the Midwest. During the latter part of next week, we should see widespread rain and snow in the heart of the Midwest. And a third storm that will develop in late in that following weekend that will form in the lower Mississippi River Basin that will move to the middle and north Atlantic coast region. If you don't get snow from the second storm, you'll definitely get it from the third. We'll end up with much colder temperatures by the time we're done with the third storm as well. So enjoy the spring-like weather that will come on this weekend, because it will probably be the last shot of warmth that we'll have for a while.
Winter will arrive, and it will be a bear as it comes in, as apparently. Tell me more about what the crop is like in the western plain states and what they can expect from that snowstorm. Will they get a good shot of snow cover there as well?
Well, it does look like the snow cover will be fairly decent in hard red wheat country. I don't have high hopes that the amount of moisture that comes with the snowfall is going to be all that impressive for Texas. The Texas Panhandle still waiting for significant amounts of moisture. They've had less than a half inch since the 1st of October. And believe it or not, out of these three storm systems, they may get a quarter of an inch of moisture, and that's about it. And our long-term study for the winter season in general does not provide much significant precipitation for the southwestern plains, so we could very well end up moving into spring season with some serious moisture shortages in the southern portions of hardware wheat country. So we'll be watching that all winter long. In the meantime, the crop in Kansas, Nebraska, and Colorado should definitely be buried deeply in snow by the time we get to the end of next week.
Drew, we appreciate you being along with us today.
Thank you, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. The markets are open again on Friday. The ag staff here at WILL will still be on holiday. You can catch Commodity Week Saturday morning. That'll be reported tonight, actually, and up on our website by about 6 o'clock. If you want to pick it up at WILL.huiuc.edu, just click on AM and then Agriculture. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a great afternoon and a very good Thanksgiving.